time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt right here with us in studio. Hello, hello again, Bruce.
Well, it's good to be here. We have a thing we talk about in poetry sometimes is you might find someone's shopping list lying on the floor of the store and say, this would make a really good poem if you read it in a certain way, right? They call those found poems. Directions sometimes for putting something together can sound that way. Well, I was, this is a found article. I was reading the 2021 winter edition of Athlon. And as you guys know, I'm color challenged, and you can tell these are different colors, but it's not easy for me.
Boy, just, can you hold them side by side?
Yeah. Side by side, you can tell. Yeah.
Slightly darker on the one on the right.
Right, yeah. So because of that, I grabbed the wrong one. I was looking for the winter of 2015 for something I knew was in there. Grabbed the wrong one and opened up the thing called A Place Beyond Words by Taj. I think that's how you pronounce it. Taj Coakley, who's an Irish writer. And it's a rumination on the relationship between art and sport. And I think about how very often some of these topics come up when we're talking with Colin Fleming or we're talking with people who have written books about a particular sport and the relation to it. This one goes really deep because it goes into things about fandom that we've spoken about before. And it's not written in a style that is going to make anybody think, oh my God, this sounds like something I had to read in college, right? It's really, really well written. And it also, it starts out with this Mr. Coakley's relationship to the game of soccer, which, you know, is one of Ireland's big games, Gaelic football and hurling probably being a little bit bigger. But when he was a kid, he had a soccer ball and he would kick it around the outside of the house and he would make laps and he would want to do it with so many touches on the ball, or he'd want to bend it around one corner. He'd make up a game that interested him and kept him going. But he said, you know, that's not why you play sports. You want to be on a team, and you don't write to not be on a team in a sense. And he brings up a point. And this is why I really hope we can get him on the air. I hadn't thought of. I'd experienced it, but I had no way to articulate it. You know, when you're named to the starting whatever in a football, whatever sport you're on, that's a big deal, right? And of course, once you're a starter, it's easier for you to fail than a third stringer, right?
Right,
because
right.
You're supposed to be somebody. You're supposed to be a hero, which he defines as someone who is not swayed by fear. Which I thought was a great bar. He got that from some other writer. So that's very similar. You get a book comes out. You work on that book forever. You finally get it published. And then what happens? Oh my God, what if the critics don't like it?
Mm.
What if the book is a failure? What if I get all these bad reviews? That you then, he said, because what happens is all the person reading that book sees is that book. That person doesn't know anything about all the things it took to get there. The same way when we watch a game, it's the culmination of everything that's gone before it for that athlete, right?
Right.
It's all the practices, the good ones, the bad ones, the other games. It's the time things didn't work out. And yet we insert ourselves as fans into the game in interesting ways, right? We've talked about this, how people will say, well, what we really need to do is get two more pitchers and... Well, you play for the Red Sox, you know, that sense of identifying with a team that and then all the fans that become a different kind of team. And he talks about this in a really, really great way. He said, you know, we want players to act. We want them to perform the same way when we go to the right. opera or the theater. And he talks a lot about how the relationship between drama and sports has really not been examined as deeply as it might have been in literature. And he said, you know, the fan, books are not worth anything unless they're readers. Is playing the game, is the event worth anything if nobody's watching? I mean, is it or isn't it? And he talks about some of those things. But he said, I wanted to really Elizabeth, he says, in her book, Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert writes about the moment of inspiration for a writer or artist. Once when she was inspired by an idea for a novel, the reaction was not mental or intellectual. It was physical. Chills ran up my arms. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up for an instant, and I felt a little sick, a little dizzy. It felt like I was falling in love or had just heard alarming news or was looking over the precipice at something beautiful, mesmerizing, and dangerous. And this is also a very good description of the reaction to a deep sporting moment. Yeah, the pass is in the air, and everything hangs on what happens after that ball starts its downward spiral. If it's caught, one person's happy. If it's knocked away, another person's happy. That, and it becomes a physical reaction. And here's what's interesting. This is the one scientific place that he went. There was a study done with monkeys, and they were able to tell how certain parts of their brain reacted when they grabbed something. You know what else? All the other monkeys next to it who don't grab it have the same reaction.
Really?
The same neurons emitted. I thought about that, and I thought, well, yeah. I mean, if I'm the guy that makes that incredible catch, and I'm really elated, so is everybody who's watching me. So that catch becomes a sort of a transferal from fan to the active participant. And he does a great job talking about it. He said that the one form of art that's closest probably to sport is dance, because art involves so much physical stuff. But I would say that, you know, maybe painting, when you're there's a lot of movement with that, it's a lot like sport. But it's how he wanted to find that out. There is great risk-taking in sport. Players are vulnerable. There's every chance in sport that one will lose, but also that one will fail, right? And I always think about how a lot of people will tell me, well, you know, I always wanted to write a book. Why didn't you? Well, I never really had the time. No, you were afraid you'd put all that time into it and nothing would happen. And when you think about that, you think about, we talk about how kids quit sports earlier and earlier. That's, I think, got a lot to do with it, is that we put failure into sports in the strangest of ways. I mean, I used to have battle with kids in track who would be, I failed, it was awful, I sucked today, whatever. I go, you had a personal best, but it came in fifth. Yeah. So the other four people may have had personal best too. You know, that sense that failure is defined by not winning. Whereas opposed to failure, to me, would be not attempting to win when you had the ability and the time and the situation to do it. That, to me, would be failure. You fail to do that. Well, you know, I think that's a lot about art, too. I've had students, and I've said to them, you know, that's a really good poem. I think if you work on that and you send it to this literary magazine, it might get published. I can't promise you it will. It might. Well, I don't know really if I want to send it out. Why? Well, you know, it's sort of personal. Yeah, well, that's what writers do. They write about personal things. If you want to be a writer, you can't hide all the personal. And I say, is it because you don't want somebody else to see it? No, it's just and I go, is it because you're afraid to send it out and it's going to come back as being rejected? No, you know, and it's our whole relationship with sport and art that I find just really fascinating, which is why I don't want to jump on too much of this. But he was talking about how we look at sports as sort of a kind of wonder. And this is the part. In 1996, scientists discovered that neurons in premotor cortex of macaque monkeys' brains fired when they performed an action such as grasping. But these neurons also fire when another animal merely observes the action. These are called mirror neurons. In sport, fans can develop a kind of human intersubjectivity. We know we are not the players on the field carrying out acts of wonder and glory, but our mirror neurons still fire, allowing us to feel as the players do. Plato knew of this and applied it to the arts, but it was not proven as a biological fact for another 2,000 years. I mean, that's one of the things that Plato talks about, and I don't remember whether it's in the Republic or not, but about how when you go to see a play, when you go to see actors, you want to be drawn into that. You really want to be drawn in. We talk about how great actors take on a role and then convince us that that is what's happening. Well, sports is the same way, right? When you think about it, the guy's coming down the court. There's a second and a half to go. He takes three steps over the half-court line, lines up a three. If he drains it, he's a hero. Why? Because he didn't. He had no fear of taking that shot, right?
Right.
If he doesn't drain it, well, it was a hell of an effort. That's a tough shot to make, you know. But if he is someone who always makes that shot and then doesn't make it, you know, what's it Michael Jordan say? I missed 3,000 shots or whatever, you know, all the things he talks about, all the 71 times I could have won the game with a final shot and I didn't, to give us an idea of how it works. But the more I read about the comparisons between writing and playing on a sports team, I thought, yeah, he's really onto something, because as a writer, you become very vulnerable. You've got this out there and everybody's allowed to comment on it. Same way, once you pay your ticket, you can boo, you can hiss, right. You can cheer, you can do whatever you want to do. And, you know, I think if we start to look at sport less as business and more as art, I think people might enjoy it more.
Interesting. But,
it was really, really interesting. And as I say, I want to get Taj on because I want him to really talk about some of this stuff. But it's a really good
one. I wonder if the difference in that is that for the spectator, the fan, there are more people who have the experience of playing a sport as kids and have that thought in their head, boy, if it were me out there, I would always give 100% and I would play for free. Not as many people have had the experience of having that artistic ability. And so I think that's part of the reason why they're viewed so differently.
Yeah, and you know, one of the interesting things, if you ask a lot of musicians what they would rather be if they weren't a successful musician, a lot of them will say an athlete, a tremendous number will say a painter. Hmm. Whenever anybody asked me that, I said, if you were in some other art form, what do you want to be? I said, I want to be a great painter. I want to just be a fabulous painter. I think that would, and I have no talent in that at all. I just can't even draw, right? So I think part of it is because when the painting is done, there's only one of them, right? When the book is done, hopefully there are thousands and thousands of copies of it, right? I remember the great Maine musician Gordon Bach once saying why he really didn't want anybody recording his concerts, his live concerts. And he said, why spoil the original with a copy? And I always agreed with that, and I think Gordon's great that way. So excellent. This was fun.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks, Bruce.
Yep.